On May 22, 2013, there was a public educational forum on the effect of marijuana on the adolescent brain. Sponsored by Laytonville Healthy Start, Ralph Cantor spoke first to students at Laytonville High School, then to a significant audience of concerned community members. Laytonville is in Mendocino County, California, in the heart of the marijuana-producing region called the Emerald Triangle. This presentation was recorded by Dan Roberts and is posted in 2 one-hour segments at www.youthspeaksout.net. This informative program is free to rebroadcast upon notification. This is part one.
I just wanted to thank you all for taking the time out of your extremely busy lives to join us here tonight for what I hope is going to be a really awesome evening of crucial information. Laytonville Healthy Starts Coalition and our staff are pleased to welcome Ralph Cantor to our community to speak to you this evening about the adolescent brain, its development, and what interactions with substances do to a growing mind. I want to take the opportunity to ask you to remain open-minded as we dive into this subject matter. I am glad that Ralph has agreed to present tonight on this important and fascinating topic. As a reminder, we are focusing on children and teens and their developing minds. If you have any questions, Ralph is open to them, but I ask that we let him present first, and then he'll open it up for questions. Here's a little bit about our guest presenter. Ralph has over 40 years' experience in education as a teacher, administrator, and school counselor, and is the author of the book, Days of Respect, Organizing a School-Wide Violence Prevention Program. He has worked as a Berkeley High High School Health Center consultant and was formerly executive director of Collaborations in Learning, a nonprofit organization that provides educational services to schools, communities, and individuals about substance abuse, prevention, and conflict resolution. Since his retirement, Ralph chooses to spend more time with his family and speaking at Bay Area middle schools and high schools, communicating with tweens and teens about the effects of drugs on youth and the development of the adolescent brain. We are extremely fortunate that Mr. Cantor has agreed to travel to our Laytonville community to give a public presentation to local parents, students, and community members. Please help me in welcoming him to our community, and I thank you for taking the time to attend tonight's presentation.
I had a great day today. I really enjoyed working with the kids here today at Laytonville High School. It was really fun. And part of it, you know, people were saying, well, this is something that the kids are really interested in, or we really like the way you present and all that. But part of it is that people are really hungry for information, and particularly information about marijuana. And so it was really easy. But the other thing is that the kids were, first of all, really, really respectful of me. I'm going to a lot of high school. Now that I retired, I wasn't planning on doing a business, but it seems like there's not a lot of people that are talking about marijuana the way I am. Number one, the kids were really open to learning. They really were willing to listen to what I had to say. And number two, they were really respectful. And I think that you guys need to hear that for somebody that's coming in and visiting lots of high schools all across the state. This was a neat day. These kids were great to work with, and I want you to know that. And so it not only reflects something about the community, it reflects something about the learning environment at the school. These kids were ready to go. And it's not so, today was a health fair where usually people are kind of bouncing around. It's not like a regular class. Well, I had them all the way through for all four periods today. They were great. So it was a really good day. What I do now is, besides being retired, being a grandpa and all that kind of stuff, is one day a week I work at Berkeley High, which is not far from where I live. And what I do is I go into the classrooms and I talk with the kids a lot about marijuana. Believe it or not, marijuana use at Berkeley High is almost twice the use it is at Laytonville High School. Does that blow your mind? Well, I couldn't believe it when I was looking at these statistics, but they're using more in Berkeley than they are up here. And I think maybe part of the reason is you guys are kind of used to it a little bit, or it's kind of like a norm, and, you know. But in Berkeley, it's like, this is what's happening, man. And so I go into classrooms and I talk with kids about weed, particularly about drugs. And I'm having a great time doing it. And so this is the introduction that I gave to a number of the classes here today. So a few weeks ago at Berkeley High, I come in there and the teacher made a mistake and introduced me and said, "This is Mr. Cantor. He knows more about weed than anybody ever met." And it really made these kids angry. And one of the kids in the back of the room said, "Man, you've got nothing to teach me about weed. I could teach you about weed. I know about blunts and bongs and purple and vaporizers and on and on and on." And I said, "Okay, but do you understand what marijuana does?" He said, "What do you mean, what does it do? Makes your mouth dry, makes your eyes bloodshot, you get the giggles, you get the munchies. I know what marijuana does." And I said, but why does it do that? What does marijuana do to your brain to make a marijuana high? I mean, it's not like an alcohol high. It's not like a cocaine. It's not like any other high. A marijuana high is a marijuana high. What does marijuana do to your brain that makes that high?" And the kid looked at me and said, "Your brain, ah, man, it don't do nothing to your brain." And so I realized that there's a way in which he had this kid knew all this stuff about growing and everything else, and yet what it really came down to, what does it do to your brain? He was clueless. And not only is he clueless, not only are most of the students clueless, but so are the adults. I think, and I think the reason, and this is why I appreciate Jamie when she said, you know, to have an open mind, is that people have such a strong attitude around marijuana. There's a lot of charge around it. And the attitudes that they have is one of two attitudes. Either they have an attitude that marijuana is bad, period. And then they tell you it rots your brain, it leads to other drugs, you're going to end up on the street. Marijuana, bad, okay? Or, and believe me, the people that hear it, that's all they want to hear. I want to hear about how bad marijuana is, all right? Then you got another whole group that decides marijuana's all good, okay? And then they say it's an herb, it's a plant, God put it on the planet to everybody to enjoy, it's a medicine, marijuana all good. And we're so locked into this all good or all bad business that nobody is really listening. How does the truth work? What the heck is going on here with marijuana? How does it work? And the truth is, it's not black and white. It's a complex drug. It's a complex thing that's going on. And that's the place that I come in. I want to be able to teach that stuff off of the good and bad and just be able to teach a little bit about how marijuana works. And so that's what I do. When I go into the classrooms, that's what I did today, was what I call drug education. And it's very interesting because during this health fair also today, there was sex education. And I didn't get a chance to see the sex education. I was teaching all the classes over there. But we did one at Berkeley High a couple of weeks ago. And here, they lined up penises. And we're teaching people how to put condoms on the penises. I mean, that kind of, you know, but that's where we got with drug education, really following AIDS. When AIDS came along, people realized, oh man, we can't mess around this drug education. We gotta tell a real deal here, okay? But that hasn't arrived yet with drugs, okay? And what I want to do is I want to talk about the real deal. And in some ways, it can be dicey. I did not want to teach at the middle school, because I don't want to have any parent come back to me at the middle school and say, "What the hell did you tell my kid about weed? You told my kid that weed might fire off dopamine and make him feel good? I don't want my child to know that. You told him that they eat the apple and the apple might taste better? I don't want my child to know that. I just want to hear how bad it is, okay? I want you to tell these kids that it's bad." And it's just not the kind of drug education I do. I'm here to just teach about the drug. And if people didn't like it, they wouldn't do it. See, I got to kind of open up the whole story, and when I do, I find the kids and the adults are really receptive to what's going on. So I'm having a great time, and it's really a pleasure to be up here. I did not use a PowerPoint presentation with the kids. It was more back and forth. I said I would teach about how weed works in the brain. I want to teach about a drug called dopamine, and I'll answer questions and answers. It was very interesting, a lot of the questions that went back and forth. The biggest one was, came up in three classes. This is going to be funny. How many people know what cross-fading is? Any other kids? Yeah. Because you work with them, that's why. Yeah, right? And the adults don't. You know, I went to a little middle school in Orinda, which is really this kind of white upper class community. And I said, and here were seventh graders, and I said to the seventh graders, how many people know what purple is? And every one of the seventh graders raised their hand. I couldn't believe it. You know, that it's really out there. What crossfading is mixing alcohol and weed, or mixing one drug. And so here these kids are asking these very kind of sophisticated questions here. It was quite a day. I loved it. And so now I'm ready to do this part. Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I'll just try to talk loud, and that way you can hear it if the microphone is in the corner there. So here we go. My history and present contribution. And what I want to say is one of the things, because I'm older, I say to the students, do you know how marijuana really became part of the culture? Because I went to school in the Bronx from 1958 to 1962, and it was a pretty tough high school in the Bronx. There was no weed. What changed? Nobody, I kind of get these blank faces. What changed between 62 and 65 that all of a sudden weed was all over the place? Hippies. And so I feel like in some ways, and then the progression of marijuana from hippie stage of 1 to 3% to 15 to 20%, all the students know is this is the way things are. And it's really important for them to get some of the history that's going on. Knowledge. Oh, so here's the deal tonight. What I feel like in terms of parents talking with kids about drugs and about weed, it isn't so much what's the right thing to say. Two things are real important for me for that. It's funny. Oh, how embarrassing. So, this is not part of the PowerPoint, but I wanted to share a little bit here. There's different ways of looking at the brain, none of which is real. They're all models. We really, I mean, I don't know if you saw what Obama did just recently, but he said he was standing in front of a photo of JFK and the rocket and the moon thing, and how JFK said, this is what I'm dedicating. I'm saying we're going to go to the moon in X number of years. And he did it. What Obama was saying is, I want to study the brain. That's what I want to do for the next 10 years, is study the brain, because that's part of what we need to learn, okay? But as it is, we got some models, even though they're not necessarily true. And one of those models says this, that the brain can be looked at in three as three parts. The deep part of the brain is the reptilian brain, okay? And that, in the first part of our evolvement, that had to do with safety. Do I have enough air to breathe? Is anybody going to hurt me? Do I got food? And it's all taking care of business to stay alive. The next phase that we went into was what's called the mammalian brain. And the mammalian brain is when mammals stopped eating their young. Okay, we stopped eating our young. So we started to raise kids. So we started to raise our young. So this area of the brain, sometimes it's called the limbic area of the brain. It's the area of the brain that's connected with feelings, with trust. Do I belong here? What's going on with me? It doesn't speak English. It's not rational. But it's very real, those feelings, have trust. It's all those things that you kind of know are there, but you can't measure them. Then the front part of the brain is the prefrontal cortex. This is the thing that separates us from everybody except dolphins. This is the place where we're thinking and we're learning how to read and write. And this is where schools are connected. Schools are trying to teach kids how to have more skills in their prefrontal cortex, reading, writing, doing math, all that other kind of stuff. Okay. Now, that's fine. And a lot of us want to talk to this place. And today, I did a lot of biological teaching, showing synaptic spaces and stuff. You'll see it tonight. But I want to say something. I wasn't really talking to this part of the brain with kids. I was talking to this part of the brain. I want to be able to reach people. It's the connection that means more than almost anything else. There's a guy, David Brooks. He's a political wonk for the New York Times, and you sometimes see him on NPR, Brooks and Shields, that guy. And so here's this whole intellectual guy who wrote a book about a year and a half ago called The Social Animal. And what it was about was he was talking about people, and what he was saying was, you know how people elect the president? They don't elect the president from here. They elect the president from here. What's going on in my gut? That's the part that really counts. Not the thinking as much as you might think. It's this place. And so when you're working with your child or you're being with your child, it's not so much what's the right thing that I'm going to say. The most important thing is this connection. What is your connection with your child? That's what you want. And really to pay attention, this does not get the respect that it deserves. We're so hung up on all the information and all the thinking when this is a very evolved part of the brain. When I'm talking right now, you may be hearing what I'm talking about, but that deeper part of the brain is taking in a lot of information. You're figuring a lot. So you may not even be able to verbalize it, but there's a lot that's going on besides the words that are coming out. And what I'm saying is it's important for us to pay attention to this part of the brain. What's your connection with your child? That's the thing that's the most important to me. What you say and how you work it, that's important, but it's not as important as your connection. That's the thing that you want to nourish. And in teaching, the first part of all my teaching was really about setting up some credibility. So people would say, maybe I want to listen to this guy. But that doesn't come from here. It comes from a deeper place in the brain. So that's all I want to say about that. And so what I want to say is that what I want to give you is knowledge. I want to teach you some about how the drug works. But when you work with your child, it's not just about the knowledge. The thing about the knowledge is so that you feel clear to be able to say, if this is the case, I don't want you to smoke weed. And here's the reason why I don't want you to do that. And to be able to feel clear about that. Because right now, people are not clear about any of this stuff with weed. The heck is the story here? And so I want to get you to a place where at least you have some knowledge so that then you can communicate. And I'm constantly going here, communicate from your gut. Because kids are great BS detectors, you know. And so there's a way in which it's got to really make sense to you when you talk to your child about this stuff. So that's what I want to do here. I'm not a neuroscientist or a doctor. So, and if there is one out there, leave me alone. Let me do my thing unless I'm saying something really wrong. Then correct me. Otherwise, because these are models. It's not, the brain is so complicated. I'm a science teacher, high school science teacher. That's the way I'm going to teach this stuff. Here's what I want to teach. I want to teach the difference between an adolescent brain and an adult brain. This is very important to me. In Berkeley right now, in another week, I'm going to be presented to the city council. And what it's about is they made laws in the 70s in Berkeley about weed. And the law that they said was, and they told us to all the police, and it still exists today in 2013, you will not bust, busting somebody for marijuana is the lowest priority on your list. So basically, I don't want you busting anybody for weed. Now, what they didn't do is say, of course, under 18 is a different ballgame. They never said that. Nobody gets busted for smoking weed in Berkeley. So now, across the street from Berkeley High is the police station and Berkeley High. And the kids are sitting in the park and they're all passing blunts around to each other and the parents are going nuts. And so now we're trying to at least say, and part of my presentation is, that it is different for a teenager smoking marijuana than it is for an adult. It is a different ballgame for a teenager. I have no argument with the medicinal marijuana movement. I think that marijuana has a lot to be able to offer to the medical community and everything else. At the same time, it is different for a 16 or a 15-year-old to be smoking than a 22 or a 23-year-old. So that's part of what I want to teach and show you why that's true. The second thing I want to teach is about dopamine. And that's the stuff that I taught today a lot in school, because I was teaching a lot about dopamine. Third thing is, how does marijuana work? What does it do to the brain? And if I have time and go into it, I'd like to also cover alcohol and be able to answer questions back and forth. If you have a question, and it's a quickie, and it's a clarification, stop me. Raise your hand and ask the question. I just don't want to go off too far, because sometimes I can go off on the questions and then not stay focused here. But if you got a quick question, ask it, and I'll definitely leave time at the end. Okay. Nurturing the connection and relationship with your child. That's that stuff. Good. I don't want to go there. Take no stance on legalization. I don't want to get into the whole thing. First thing, that is different between an adolescent and an adult, and I want to say something. I did not show this or teach this to the students today. And the reason that I didn't is I feel like for some people, for a teenager, this might feel demeaning. So I just don't go there, but I will go there with you guys. What these two pictures are is a conglomeration of MRIs, of pictures of brain activity. And what they did was they took somewhere between 200 and 300 adolescents, and they gave them a bunch of emotional problems to solve and intellectual problems to solve, and they got them involved, and then they did the same thing with adults. And they, and what this is a conglomeration of all the MRIs from the teenagers and all the MRIs from the adults. And what we see is that the adult is working in a higher place in the prefrontal cortex. They are thinking differently than a child, than an adolescent. We used to think a long time ago, when I was growing up, that a teenage brain was pretty much the same as an adult brain. The only difference was teenagers didn't have the experience that adults have. That was the big difference. But it turns out that it's not just that. Biologically, teenagers are not in the same place that adults are. And you know who found this out first? Car rental companies. Car rental companies. Nowadays, you want to rent a car, you've got to be 25. Why don't you rent a car to a 21-year-old? What's the problem? I don't know exactly, but they keep getting into way more accidents than the people that are 25. They're not driving as responsible. I don't know what's going on. Something, though, is going on. Well, it turns out this is what's going on. They don't plan and think things out the same way as an adult. And we, as parents, cannot expect them to. And you can say to a kid, what were you thinking? I don't know, I wasn't, you know, they're not there. And so here's the bottom line on this that I want to say, that I didn't say to the kids, which is that a lot of people, adults, have drugs in their lives. People are smoking weed, drinking alcohol, maybe doing whatever. Okay, a lot of adults are doing that. And you know something? It's not easy. It's tricky to have marijuana in your life or alcohol in your life or some other drug in your life. But people can do it, but it requires a level of sophistication to be able to do that. Kids do not have that level of sophistication. They are not there yet. I don't teach this to the teenagers. I feel it's demeaning. But you need to know that they are not in the same place as you guys are. They are not sophisticated enough to be able to handle the drug. Drugs are very tricky to be able to incorporate in your life. Okay, so next piece. So what this says basically, I don't want you to read it. What it says is that the parents need to be the prefrontal cortex for their kids. You need to sit down and say, okay, if you do this, then what might happen? Let's figure this stuff out, okay? Because they're not developmentally there yet. Okay, there's a lot of marijuana usage around. What this is, to me, whether or not you ever use the drug is not important. But what is important is what happened in the last 30 days. And this is for all of Mendocino County. And so in the last 30 days, and this comes off the California Healthy Kids Survey, and I want to say something. The California, I don't know who did the California Healthy Kids Survey 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but the statistics were really weird. And so I didn't, so I'm going with these statistics. I think something might have happened. Last 30 days, alcohol. Have you had alcohol in the last 30 days? Seventh graders, 17% said they had alcohol in the last 30 days. Ninth graders, about a third. And I want to say something else about this alcohol business and this drinking business. For the most part, kids do not have a glass of Cabernet. That's not the way kids drink. It sounds funny even, right? That's not when a young person drinks, for the most part, they want to drink to get drunk. Okay? They binge drink. They don't sit and sip a glass of Cabernet. Okay? It's quite... So what we're looking at here are really binge drinking rates in many ways. 11th graders, 46% drank alcohol in the last month. So almost half of 11th graders in Mendocino County drank at least once in the last 30 days. That's a pretty high statistic. Marijuana, 7% in 7th grade, 24% in 9th grade, and 11th grade, 29%. At Berkeley, it's 48%. Can you imagine? So this is not lightweight. So that means that 11th graders, one-third of all 11th graders are getting high at least once a month. Okay, so those are the statistics. And here's part of what's connected with it. Number one, I know this is kind of, I couldn't figure out how to do this on the PowerPoint. Fairly easy to obtain alcohol. 37% of 7th graders in Mendocino County say it's easy or very easy to get alcohol. 7th graders, one-third of 7th graders say it is easy or very easy to get marijuana. 9th grade, 63% say it's easy or very easy for alcohol. 73% say it's of 9th graders say it's easy or very easy to get marijuana. And 11th grade, 84%. So, and then the third thing is that perceived harm. How do you think about marijuana and alcohol? For alcohol, the perceived harm is medium. Yeah, there's some harm there. For marijuana, the perceived harm is low. So what we're looking at around these rates is that here it is all around the place, and it's really easy to get a hold of, and a lot of people see it's no problem. And I want to say something else, it's fairly cheap as well. So it's no wonder that so many kids are smoking weed. They don't think of it as being a problem, and there's so much availability that's there. So here's the second thing around, and this one I did show. Yeah, it's wild, huh? These two slides are fairly new. I'm always trying to talk about brain development for adolescents. And so now I came up on this thing, and I think this thing might work. We'll see. What I'm saying is, this is what I'm picturing as an adolescent brain. In other words, it's got a million connections that can go into all these areas. It's actually an aerial view of a million little freeways in L.A., but it shows that we can go in all sorts of directions, okay? By the time they get to be around 21, 22, the brain transforms into this. And the two big differences are, number one, something called pruning, and number two, something called myelination. And this happens during teenage time. What pruning is about is if you don't work, you're not riding on these highways, you're not taking those roads, after a while, they get pruned away. Just like you would prune away a tree to take branches away from a tree, a lot of these branches get pruned away. A child's brain, it's not no longer a child, when they're 23, weighs less than when they're 15. And their bodies are growing, but the brains weigh less. And the reason is that a lot of these neural connections are dropping away. They actually lose brain matter. At the same time, the connections that they really work become more highways. They get what's called myelinated in. And so what that can look like is this. So let's say when you're 4 years old, somebody teaches you how to tie your shoe. Not a simple thing. Figure out how to put this lace over that and under that and whatever. You've taught your kids, you can see just how difficult it is to learn how to tie your shoe. So the child does it and kind of works it in their brain to figure this out. And in the brain, they get so let's say these are the neural connections. These are the neurons that it took to make this thing. And so that's my shoe tying connections in my brain, okay? As I do it again and again and again and again, what begins to happen is what grows around the outside of this is something called myelin. And it grows around the outside of these electrical connections. And it's like insulation on a wire. And it gets to make this very efficient. So after a while, this just fires off really easily. It gets hardwired in. So now, I could tie my shoe and talk to you guys at the same time, right? Because it's hardwired in. This is what myelination is. And during teenage time, a lot of the things that they're working, that they're doing over and over, like for me in the Bronx, it was taking jump shots. until the sun went down, you know, or whatever. That's what gets myelinated in. So I got really good at taking jump shots and getting that little pause in there and everything, right? They wanted me to play piano. That didn't get good, right? Because I didn't work that one. The ones that you work get myelinated in, and the ones that you don't work get dropped away, get cleaned away. This is a crucial time when this brain is developing to myelinate in really useful things, so that what scares me around marijuana, for instance, is that the drug works very, very well. It really works well, and it can take care of a lot of things that students need to be able to do. And what scares me is if I smoke weed when I want to have a when I want to party. I smoke weed when I'm with my friends. I smoke weed when I'm bored. I smoke weed if I feel stressed. I smoke weed to take care of my ADD so I can chill. I smoke weed for my anger. I smoke weed for pleasure. I smoke weed for on and on. If that becomes a big tool for you, that's what becomes myelinated in. And that concerns me at this time. At this time, kids need to figure out the highways that make things work for them. They need to be able to, how do I find out what pleases me? How do I find out what I'm interested in? How do I find out what moves me? Where is that stuff? That's what they need to figure out. If they don't, this stuff just gets myelinated in, and this is the way I take care of anger, frustration, boredom, pleasure, the whole nine yards, man. And I have no other tools. And what happens later on is that now the biology has changed. So now, biologically, I've changed my mind into this highway that has weed in it, and I don't have any skills. And now the weed's getting to be a problem with me. My girlfriend doesn't like me smoking weed. It's not good to do on the job. I can't figure out this. I'm having trouble stopping smoking weed because, number one, it's myelinated in, and number two, I don't have any skills. How do I deal with frustration? How do I deal with pleasure? What do I do with my boredom? If I started doing this at 15 years old, I don't have a clue. So I'm stuck in two ways. I'm stuck with the biology that's telling me to smoke, and I don't have alternatives to be able to break this habit. This is why I am so concerned around it with teenagers. Once they get to be around 20, 21 years old, this stuff is in there, then let them experiment. But if this is the solutions for their problems at 15 years old, we got a problem. And that is different than adults. And you want to know something? For the most part, because I don't have a problem with the medicinal marijuana movement and the whole cannabis thing, but you know something? It's us people in schools that see the other end of the marijuana thing. Not everybody sees that. It's people that are working in schools or parents that they got a concern around this stuff. But a lot of people, hell, it's medicine, it's whatever, not a problem. But us working with youth, we can see it in a different way. Okay, so here's the deal. There's this drug called dopamine. I want to do a little bit of teaching with you. And this I did do with the students. Can you all see this okay? Is this working for you?
Yeah.
So, not in the thinking part of the brain, but in the deep part of the brain up here is a place called the nucleus accumbens. And what the nucleus accumbens is a place that fires off dopamine in the brain. Okay? I want to take a slice of this and look at it under a microscope. And when you look at it under a microscope, it looks like this. One little piece of it. And for those of you that had your high school biology, you'll probably recognize what I just drew as a brain cell. This is the cell membrane. This is the nucleus, and it has these long dendrites that reach out. Okay? Here's a second one. And now the whole deal in the brain is, how do brain cells talk to one another? How do we think? Where's the action in the brain? And in order to understand that, we go to the end of the dendrite on one brain cell, and the end of the dendrite, it's called an axon, on the other brain cell, and I take that area there and blow it up, because that's where the action is. Didn't think you would be in school tonight, did you? But you are. So here's the end of one brain cell, and here's the beginning of the next. Okay? This is the end of one, beginning of the next. And what happens normally in the brain is we get input into our brain. Right now, a lot of you are listening to me talk about drugs, okay? Some of you might be thinking about what you could do after this is over. Some of you might be in Bermuda here. Somebody else is not. I don't know what's going on for everybody's brain. But I do know that there is something going on there. And when that, whatever that stimulus is, when it hits a brain cell, two things happen the way the brain works. Number one is the brain is a chemical factory. We used to think, this going back a long ways, but when I first learned about the brain, they would have this secretary or whatever that would, oh, you want to talk to ladies' lingerie? You know, it was this kind of connection stuff here, right? And that's what we thought of as the brain. But really, that's not a good description of the brain. A better description of the brain is it's a chemical factory. The brain makes chemicals. And those chemicals are called neurotransmitters. And so it gets an input into the brain, it makes a neurotransmitter, and then the next thing that happens is electricity. The brain works with electricity. There's an electric spark, and the electric spark is called a synapse. And when a synapse happens, it fires across this space whatever chemical, whatever neurotransmitter it made. And when that neurotransmitter hits the receptor site on the next brain cell, we get it. And we either think something or we feel something. Then it sends it on to the next brain cell and the next brain cell. And there's also something called reuptake, so that whatever chemical fired off can get fired off again and again, so we don't lose our own brain chemistry. So this is basically the way the brain works. Okay, I want to talk about one chemical that the brain makes. And that chemical is called dopamine. Here's the deal. You first get born. The first moments you come onto this planet, you come out of your mother's womb, your biological mother's womb. And when you come out of the womb, they cut off the umbilical cord and they wash the baby, wash off the mucus and the blood, whatever. And then hopefully somebody comes along, grabs that baby up and brings that baby to their chest and goes, oh boy, I got my baby boy, I got my baby girl. Okay? When they do that, inside the baby's brain, what it does is it fires off dopamine. There's a chemical reaction. The baby gets held and it fires off dopamine. And what the baby feels is, ooh, this good. This good. Being held, this good. Okay? Now, the feeling is this good. Biologically, it's dopamine hitting the receptor site. So, are we talking about something physical or are we talking about something mental? Are we talking about something emotional? What are we talking about here? This is the mind-body connection. There is not a separation between any of that stuff. When you feel that way or something feels important to you, it's firing off dopamine in your brain. Does that make sense to people? Good. So that's the biological thing. So one thing doesn't happen without the other. So now, sometime later, somebody says, instead of doing X, Y, Z, A, B to fire off dopamine, you know, you see little kids doing it and everything, somewhere along the line, somebody comes and says, here, smoke this. THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, the active ingredient in marijuana. If the drug works, and people's brains are different. Everybody gets born with their own genetic things that they got from the DNA, from their parents and grandparents or whatever. People react differently to drugs. You know, you watch it with alcohol. Some people don't drink alcohol at all. Some people drink a little bit of alcohol. Some people drink a lot. Some people really, you know, people have different relationships with the drugs. And what it has to do with is how their brain reacts to the drug. If somebody is an alcoholic or a drug addict, they are not bad people. They are not weak people. It's just that when they take in the weed or the alcohol or whatever it is, for them, it fires off a huge amount of dopamine. Okay? And for this child that smokes THC and it fires off, let's say there's just a regular amount of dopamine, what that child's brain says, I don't care what the parent says, I don't care what the teacher says, what the brain says is, boom, this good. This good. It's firing off dopamine. This is a good thing. Okay? And part of what I want to teach kids is that it's a trick. It's not the real thing. You took a drug that managed to trick the brain into firing off dopamine. Okay? I'm not knocking the feeling, but you got to figure out what does fire off dopamine for you. And the thing is that this drug works so well today that it just fires off a ton of dopamine. And for a lot of kids, and I want to say something more about the dopamine. As we studied it more, this picture I got off of Time magazine about 4 years ago. Look at the way it defined dopamine. Drive, motivation, the what's important filter. Here's the deal. When you go back there, if the child doesn't get helped, the child is going to be mentally ill. Babies need to be helped. The child doesn't get fed, the baby's going to die. Okay? So when I get the milk or I get held, it's not just this good, it's this important. This is important to me. Getting held is important to me. Getting food is important to me. So it's not, we used to think of dopamine as just being pleasure. It is way beyond pleasure. It's the what's important filter. When dopamine fires off, this means something's important. And for some kids, you can lift up the hood, or some people, you can lift up the hood of a car, and they lean forward in, they want to see what's going on. That's firing off dopamine for them. They're interested. For other people, they couldn't care less what's underneath the hood of a car. Something else floats their boat, right? It's different. What fires off dopamine is different for different people. But people need to figure out what's important to me. What moves me? What am I interested in? Where is my juice? What makes me feel alive? Stepping on a lacrosse field or reading a piece of literature, or I don't know what it is that floats somebody's boat, but part of what you need to do in teenage time is figure out what those things are. And what scares me about the weed is the weed works so well that you don't have to do any of that stuff. All of a sudden, it fires off the dopamine, and what I go is, man, this is important. This is important. Not only is it important, it makes me feel good. Not only does it take care of the anger and the ADD and the depression and the frustration and all this other kind of stuff. I can make some money out of this thing as well. I can turn this thing into an industry here. This is important. And I get the backup from the biology that's telling me, you're darn right it's important, okay? So it makes sense what's going on here, okay? And what's necessary, my biggest message for kids that went on today, and I didn't mean this as a joke or anything else, you need to get a life. Teenage time, you need to figure out what fires off dopamine for you. What's important for you? What moves you? What interests you? What gets you off and leaning forward there? That's the job of a teenager. Not just in terms of where my pleasures are, but how do I want to earn a living? I mean, I don't want people dragging their butts off to work on a job that you know, yeah, they're getting paid, but they don't like it. Figure out what you're interested in that fires off some dopamine for you, and then do that work. And you know what? It's sort of like this, with how it took me late in life for it, but this fires off dopamine for me. And they pay me for it. That's called getting a life. You want to. So I want young people to figure out where are their interests. And, you know, they're not doing Legos anymore. That was before. Now they're stepping up. They're more sophisticated. What are your pleasures now? How do you find out what those pleasures are? And if all of a sudden somebody hands me this, it fires off the dopamine. I got it now. I don't have to figure out what my pleasure is. It is right here in front of me, okay? And so my message for kids is you got to get this out of the way to figure out what's going on in your brain. Who are you? What moves you? What's important to you? What makes you feel alive? Where is that dopamine for you? And that, to me, is some of the biggest concerns around marijuana. And this stuff starts to get hardwired in. And my whole message is get a life. Figure out what those things are. What fires off dopamine for you? I'm on a roll here, I think. Here's my clicker. So, they need to figure out how to deal with boredom. How do I develop my interest? Boredom, God's way of telling me to get a life, okay? But I got to figure that out. What are my interests? How do I deal with my boredom? How do I have good times? How do I figure out how to have good times? How do I deal with stress? God knows life is full of stress. Social skills. How do I talk to people and connect with people? Academic skills. My God, I got all the homework and everything. What moves me? These are developmental tasks that teenagers have to do. This is their job during that time. Get a life. Where's your juice? Where's your interest, your energy? Where do you feel your spirit? Is it in mechanics, arts, people, science? What moves you? That's the message that's there. Let me stop for a minute. Otherwise, what happens is this thing works so well, I don't need to work any of these guys here. Okay? And so one concern on this is that I don't develop these skills to be able to fire off dopamine, and I've hardwired in my brain this as the solution. And so you get to be a little older and you realize, oh my God, I'm stuck here, man. And I want to break through another myth. Is marijuana addictive? I'll tell you my answer to that is, you know, just to show you how low our consciousness is around this, is alcohol addictive? Yeah. Does everybody get addicted to alcohol? No. A lot of people drink it, right? But do some people get addicted to alcohol? You better believe it. Why? Because it really works well for them. Because they drink it and they love it. Okay? The same is true for marijuana. The same is true for marijuana. If I keep doing this and it fires off dopamine in my brain, then what begins to happen is my brain learns that I smoke weed and I get a reward. And the reward is dopamine. And so what can happen is that, well, let me leave this up here for a second. I just realized something else. One other thing I want to say about this. A few things I want to say about this. Number one, if instead of doing it naturally, you force a dopamine release, you don't get reuptake. You urinate the dopamine out. You lose the dopamine. That's why people feel a little burnt out after the high is over. All that happened was they just lost their dopamine. They just don't have a lot of juice left in it. It didn't reuptake. If you do things naturally, you exercise, you do some aerobic exercise, or you're playing, or you're doing whatever it is, it fires off dopamine, and it keeps reuptaking. But if you force a dopamine release, you lose the dopamine. That's number one. Number two, the brain is not used to a lot of dopamine, unless you're living a life like Madonna. You know, we just don't have these huge pleasures all the time, and yet the drug is firing off all this dopamine. So what the brain has to do is it has to make more dopamine receptor sites to be able to receive all the dopamine. It's not used to that much dopamine. So it makes all these receptor sites, so you begin to develop what I call a party brain, which is that you got all these receptor sites going, okay, we're ready for the dopamine now. Where is it, baby? We're all here. When is it party time? You follow? The second thing that happens is if you keep pounding it over and over again, the same thing that can happen with your ears listening to rock music. If you turn it up really loud, it doesn't have to be rock music. You just turn music up really loud. After a while, your ears go a little deaf. What happens here, it's called neuroadaptation, is that the receiving end on that pleasure center of the brain gets duller. You don't feel as much pleasure. You're literally dulling out the pleasure center of your brain. And sometimes people can see this also as tolerance. In other words, where the weed that's being smoked today is 15 to 20% THC, it really should only take two or three drags to get you loaded. But I watch people smoke the whole blunt. You know, the whole blunt. And the reason is after a while they're dulling out this pleasure center of the brain. And that's a lot, because most of life is not these big pleasures. You've got to be able to enjoy the little pleasures. But if you dull this out, it's a different ballgame. Okay? Now, this is what changes in the brain. So this is the thinking part of the brain. And the thinking part of the brain figures out that if I can get some THC into this nucleus accumbens over here, I'm going to get a reward. I'm going to feel good, okay? So the brain, the thinking part of the brain has to figure out, where am I going to get some marijuana? I have to figure out who's selling the weed. Not only that, how am I going to pay for it? I'm going to have to get some money to pay for it. And not only that, now that I got it, how am I going to smoke it? You know, do I roll it in a blunt? Then I'm going to need a grinder. Or do I do a pipe? Or how do I smoke it? And then where am I going to smoke it? I can't just smoke it anyway. So you've got a lot of things to figure out. And you figure all that out in the thinking part of your brain to get the drug into your nucleus accumbens to get your reward. And then you get your reward. You get your dopamine and yahoo, right? Then you do it again because you're learning. Oh boy, I do this. It's like a seal. I put a seal up on the table. I give it a fish. It goes, whoa, I got it. After a while, it knows that it jumps up on the table. It gets a fish. So I go through all this here, and it fires off dopamine. That's my fish for a human being, okay? And as you do it more and more and more, what begins to happen is not only does it get myelinated in, but this begins to get more powerful. Have you ever seen Little Shop of Horrors? It's an interesting movie. Right? And it's about this plant that they're feeding blood, right? And after a while, after you feed the plant a whole bunch of times, the plant gets really, gimme, and it starts to take over. What happens here is after a while, this part of the brain starts to tell this part of the brain, go get the drug. In the beginning, it's behavior that changes the biology. But after a while, the biology will direct the behavior. It's sort of like, and I know I did this, took a cigarette, this for years I was a cigarette smoker. I take a cigarette out of my pocket, light it up, go, man, I gotta quit smoking cigarettes. You ever see that? What that is this part of the brain telling this part of the brain, just shut the hell up and get me the cigarette because I want my cigarette, okay? And one of the problems when people do have problems with drugs in this kind of way is this part of the brain is saying, no, you got to stop, man. It's not good here. This part of the brain says, I don't care. I want it. And you get a kind of a war. And I'm sure you've all felt that in some way, a war inside your brain that says, I want it. No, I want, right? And you get into that kind of thing. That's what addiction is. It begins to get a power of its own. How are we doing? Good. Oh, this is a nice piece. I don't want you to read it. I'd rather talk it out for a second. Dopamine is not the only feel-good drug in the brain. It's endorphins, right? There's a whole bunch of feel-good drugs in the brain that feel different, right? One of those feel-good drugs in the brain, instead of dopamine, is a drug called serotonin. And serotonin is a very legitimate feel-good drug in the brain, but it feels different than dopamine. When serotonin fires off in the brain, listen to this, when serotonin fires off in the brain, you get a feeling of well-being. Now, what do I mean by a feeling of well-being? Well, I got people in my life who love me. That can give me a feeling of well-being. I know I got skills. I can earn a living. That can give me a feeling of well-being. I respect what I do. That can give me a feeling of well-being. I got other skills. I like to play piano. I have skills. I have people that love me. I have interests in my life. I feel good about my life. That's serotonin. That is different. And it doesn't mean you're walking around happy all the time. But you have a feeling of well-being inside yourself. Some people have it, some people don't. That feeling is serotonin. And that is different than dopamine. Dopamine is pleasure. If you got a little money in your pocket, you can buy a good meal. You can buy some music. You can get touched. You can buy some dopamine. But that's different than serotonin. This feeling okay with who I am, that's not so easy to get. That is a different kind of thing. Dopamine is fairly easy to get. It's like the difference between pleasure and happiness. And considering that I'm going to go for it anyway, in one of the classes, the way I described this was with sex, and I'm going to go for it here. Let's assume that you have sex with somebody else. This is important because you can have sex by yourself. Let's assume you have sex with somebody else. After the sex is over, what's left? And the answer, real simply, is the other person is still there, okay? But the sex piece is the dopamine piece. But once that's over, what's left is what we call a relationship. That's this is a different kind of feeling than the dopamine. The dopamine, the sex part, that's the pleasure part. That's the dopamine. The relationship part, that's the serotonin. You follow what I'm saying here? There's a big difference between pleasure and happiness. And it's really important that students understand that they're not coming to school for pleasure necessarily, but they are coming to school to put together a life for themselves so that they do feel good about who they are. Pleasure comes and goes. I'm not knocking it, but it's not nowhere near the deal of what serotonin is about. And sometimes with this pleasure thing, if I keep following this, I never get a chance to really go for the real thing.
This concludes part one of a public educational forum on marijuana and the adolescent brain. This was recorded May 22, 2013 in Mendocino County by Dan Roberts and is posted at www.youthspeaksout.net. There you can also listen to the second half of this presentation by Ralph Cantor, sponsored by Laytonville Healthy Start. Please contact us for permission to rebroadcast or to purchase CDs through the website www.youthspeaksout.net or check out on Facebook Laytonville-Healthy-Start.